But he sees that what people are experiencing, which they may consider to be pleasure, is not really pleasure, but they have no other experience or standard. And then one wants to help them to experience, you know, the real happiness of Krishna consciousness. And one does so to the capacity of the person to accept. Sometimes in an organization, it may be a religious organization or a political organization or any organization, there's a certain zealousness or even fanaticism to go out and, you know, win converts or get new recruits. And that's natural. You know, one may have had some temporary experience that one wants to share with others, or one may just want to get more people to join in order to further the cause that one identifies with. But when one actually experiences the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, then his impetus to encourage others or coax others along the path so that eventually they can also have the same experience of Krishna consciousness is not based on any ulterior motive, but it's just based on the genuine care for the other person and desire to see the other person experience something that is not only a different standard of happiness, what we might say real happiness, but it's a happiness that transcends material conditions, even, you know, the loss of the body at the time of death. And therefore, you know, one helps them or tries to help them. But at the same time, it is a gradual process, and the process may span more than one lifetime. And therefore, the devotee who is the well-wisher of humanity is also patient, as Sarvatma Prabhu mentioned. He's also patient, and he knows that whatever progress they make, however little, even one baby step, it will stay with them, and it will help them to begin from the next step, even in the next life. So, yes, in the beginning, we need to hear, we need to associate with devotees and hear from them, because we're just coming out of the intoxication of material life where, you know, the glimmer of material happiness still attracts us. And by associating with devotees and hearing from them and reading Vedic literatures, one begins to see, yes, it's true, it's not all that nice in the material world. you know, probably, you know, most of the people in Santa Barbara read the same newspaper that Sarvatma read the other day, but they don't come to the same conclusion because they're intoxicated, they're inebriated. They'll read the news, but then they'll also read the ads. Oh, if you buy this, you'll be happy. You know, if you get this, you'll get that, and that will make you happy. And that's what they see, and they come around, they come away from reading the newspaper thinking that by some material adjustment or some material process, they'll find happiness. So we need the association of devotees. We need to hear from devotees. We need to read the scriptures in the association of devotees who are somewhat sober, and then hearing their sober words will help us to become sober. You know, it's like, I think the first principle in Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever is not to hang out with the same people that you used to drink with. You need to associate with other people who have gone through the process of giving up the intoxication and who will support you in your own effort. So we have the same principle here. We have to avoid the association of people who are, you know, taking the same intoxicant that we know has gotten us into trouble. And we associate with people who've gone through the process of, you know, giving it up. Even if they're not completely, you know, 100% successful in giving it up, but they've by and large given it up, and they've definitely been more successful so far than we have, and they can help us. So, in the meantime, that's the best support we can get, the association of devotees. And the words of the Vedic literatures that they repeat with their own, you know, realizations and experiences. And at the same time, to chant, because that is the most important process in bhakti yoga, to chant. And by chanting, we begin to experience the higher taste of Krishna consciousness. And then, of course, we always want the association of devotees, but when we actually experience the pleasure of Krishna consciousness through chanting and serving Krishna, then we don't have to be so wary of meeting with people who are not Krishna conscious, because we can see them in the proper perspective, at least from the Krishna conscious perspective, and see that they're really not happy because of the intoxication. They may believe that they're happy, but actually they're not happy from another standard. And then we extend ourselves to them and try to help them.
Wouldn't that give the devotee an air of superiority? Like, I know what you should be doing, and if you try to help someone to reach your platform, and that person doesn't want anything to do with it, doesn't make it feel, well, you've done your duty, so now you feel superior, you have done your duty, and you still feel better than the other person. So, or on the contrary, you may feel helpless and inferior. You're thinking, oh, I can't help this person. So what's the right way to think or feel when you try to help someone else?
As I mentioned, the whole process is gradual. As you said also, the whole process is gradual and it may span more than one lifetime. But Krishna consciousness is so potent that even a little association with it can help a person. To the point that if they just appreciate a devotee, if someone just appreciates a devotee, he or she will make spiritual advancement. Srila Prabhupada gave the example, of course the principle is there in the Vedic literatures, but Srila Prabhupada gave the example, if some devotees are walking down the street and someone sees them from the window and just thinks, well, they look like very nice people, then the person will make spiritual advancement just by appreciating the devotee. So, if we can do nothing else, at least if we deal with people in such a way that they appreciate us, that's a beginning. That's a beginning. And at the same time, to the extent that we are properly situated in our own Krishna consciousness, we can see, we can see things in better perspective, and we can see people's hearts better, and see sort of like the spark of goodness in their hearts and fan the spark, encourage them to whatever extent we can. And sometimes people have doubts, sometimes people have arguments, and the mood of helping them, not based on false ego, but in the mood of helping them, we can show the fallacy of their argument or the folly of it. But if we've if we still feel proud, if we feel that we're superior to others because we have knowledge that they don't have, it means that we're still, to some extent, involved with Maya. The pleasure that one gets from feeling that one is superior to others is Maya. It's just like, lust, greed, anger, all the other things you mentioned. But when one actually starts to experience the real taste of Krishna consciousness, then the false happiness of the sense of false superiority also has no attraction, and it's seen as an obstacle, just like any other material attraction is an obstacle to one's experience of the real happiness of Krishna consciousness, and one leaves it go. If it comes up, one sees, ugh, I'm not here for that, and one just lets it go.
Krishna consciousness or preach Krishna consciousness. And now I find myself, I'm working, have a job and things like that, and sometimes I find I'm fearful to really tell people about Krishna consciousness because I might appear to be teaching or something too much. How do you overcome that, you know, fear? How do you again sort of try and give people Krishna consciousness, but in a more mature way, or a more
start again.
Okay. I'll try to be brief. I think it just a desire to help others is commendable, and Krishna being not only in their heart but in your heart will give you guidance how to intelligently present what you have in such a way that they will see your intention, and you don't have to say too much or do too much. Basically, your life should be a reflection of your consciousness. So they should pick up more from what you do than from what you say. It's a 5-minute thing. 1 5-minute argument won't do anything if it's not backed up by your own lifestyle. So if you, people will come to you eventually. People will ask you, what do you do? Why is that you look peaceful and serene and happy in the midst of all this? What are you doing that I'm not? And then that's your opening right there. That's your cue. And no matter what you say, because they ask for it, the reception will be different. Whereas if you volunteer to say something when they are not open to the idea, it's a complete waste of time. Just once I was in Florida, and there was this very nice girl student who I could see when I arrived to that place. I could see that she was a very good material to be a devotee, a transcendentalist, a spiritualist, not whatever she was doing at the time. But I could also see that she wasn't ready at all. She wasn't ready. And she would come once in a while. We had programs every week, but she would come every couple months, maybe. And I was always nice to her, but I never talked to her about Krishna consciousness. She came, she chanted, she ate, she left. That was it. That was the relationship. And one day, she came, and I was painting the house, the outside of the house. And I could see that her demeanor had changed. There was something that wasn't the same. That she was actually ready for some reason. I could perceive that. So I said, how are you? And she actually opened up and said, well, not so well. So I didn't want to talk to her then. I said, well, why don't you come tomorrow and help me paint the house? And... sorry. Seems like a good thing to say. I mean, it was a collective activity. It wasn't like me and her. It was like a bunch of people there. So why don't you come and join us and, you know, help paint the house? She said, sure. And when she came, we talked, and she was totally receptive. Totally receptive. And that changed, you know, because she was ready to hear. Then I could say anything I wanted. I still could do wrong, but I did not, hopefully. And that's all it takes. It takes someone that is ready. You know, you can talk to anybody and only one person will be listening. Or you may talk to a room full of people and, you know, you think you're talking to one person, but that person is not listening. The other person, it doesn't look like it's listening or is actually paying attention and is thinking, yes, this makes sense. I should help myself, and I should take advantage of this and change my life. So it's case by case. You have to use your discrimination. Definitely you have to be very aware of the person that you're with. Even if you're the one speaking, you have to be very aware of the person who's listening.
Put the same idea in more technical terms. the first determination that the devotee or preacher has to make is whether the person is a devotee, whether the person, and by that I don't mean a Hare Krishna devotee, but I mean a theist, whether the person is innocent and, you know, could be open to Krishna consciousness if it was presented to the person, or if the person is just going in a completely different direction. And to determine how open a person might be, of course, one may have an intuitive sense, like Sarvatma Prabhu, but one could just sort of bring up the subject of God or spiritual values without specific reference to Krishna consciousness and just see where they stand. And even then, the ones that have faith in God, some are open to learning more about God and how to approach God. And some, well, they have some faith in God, but they're you know, attached to a particular process or tradition. And they're not really open to any other process or tradition. So, you know, if they believe in God and are ready to talk about God, then we can talk. And even if they're attached to a particular tradition, we can still encourage them in their God consciousness. Even they stay in their tradition, you know. If someone has some interest in God and spiritual knowledge, then we can tell them. And much of the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is appropriate for anyone. The knowledge of the soul is appropriate for anyone. What is the difference between a living body and a dead body? Or like now, there's so much concern about war and peace. So we can say in a general sense that, you know, God is the Supreme Father, and only when people accept Him as the Supreme Father will we know that we're all brothers. You know, the sense of brotherhood can only exist when we know that there's a common Father who's God. Or the idea that the soul within every body is the same. You know, we're identifying with the body. Like, you know, I'm Muslim, or I'm Jewish, or I'm whatever, you know, Irish, or, you know, whatever the different bodily identifications are that give rise to the particular conflict in the particular place. But if people realize they're not Hindu, they're not Christian, they're not Muslim, they're not white, they're not black, they're not men, they're not women, they're not American or Chinese or Russian, but they're all spirit souls, part and parcel of God, then we won't fight over the different designations. And that is also a principle that anyone of any religious tradition can appreciate, pretty much. I mean, so, you know, we just have to see where people are and try to encourage them in God consciousness. And then if they come to the point where they really want to learn more about God, then we can tell them more about the personality of Godhead. And I think a lot has to do with your own desire. You know, some people they actually don't want people to know that they're devotees, so they hide the fact that they are devotees as much as they can. But when you come to the stage where you actually have some enthusiasm to speak to people about Krishna consciousness, then you'll do little things that will let them know that you are Krishna conscious, or there's something different about you. You know, it might be the neck beads, or, you know, whatever it is, a book that you're carrying with you. You know, it'll just give them sort of an indication that you are pursuing some spiritual path, so that if they want to talk at a certain point, they already have an indication that you're someone they could talk to. And that depends on you. Sometimes people go through stages where they don't want to talk about it, they don't want people to know. And one may go through a stage where one's actually enthusiastic to talk about it and is just looking for a chance, and let little indications out so people will have a chance that they can take advantage of.
I got news that the dinner is just about ready, so, which was the main question in everybody's mind at this point. So, we have time to chant the initiation prayers.
This reminds me, I want to make a
place. Okay. So, again, thank you for your patience, especially because we started a little late. And so, if you still have the sheet that we began with, it's at the, I believe at the bottom of the
ground.
Or the back. I'm not sure what it is. Can I look at one of them? Kara? Just one? Yeah. In the back of the Hare Krishna mantra is not there, so it's in the back. We'll sing this and then we have prasadam. Buddha has been offered to Krishna. So it's called Shunishinga Pranam.
Namaste Narasimhaya. Thank you. Prabhupada ki jai. Itai gaur premanandi.